for us. That tells you that a recording is in progress. What we're going to do here is we will record Ranking Member DeLauro's remarks. We will not record the Q&A after her remarks, and so you'll hear a message about the recording being stopped then. And this is not for the press, just to remind you, please don't tweet out things that people say during this meeting. With that, I don't want to take any more time, but to most gratefully welcome Representative DeLauro.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Deb. And thank you to everyone who was out there. I'm so delighted to have the opportunity to be with you this afternoon. Thank you for taking the time. And Deb, thank you so much for your very, very kind words and your very generous introduction. But I just want to just say that just a very big thank you for your advocacy and for advocating for all of the programs that help American community and families. For those that I haven't met before, I am Rosa DeLauro. I represent Connecticut's 3rd Congressional District and am ranking member on the House Appropriations Committee. And I just might add that I found that our discussion back in January was very, very productive. And so I'm very glad to be back with all of you now that the president's budget request is released and we have a general idea of how House Republicans want to proceed through the government funding process. I thought it would be helpful to have another conversation with you. And I just might add with regard to our Republican colleagues and my Republican colleagues that we do not have any budget yet. The April date has really slipped, so there really isn't any idea of what the numbers might be. In terms of appropriations, there isn't a top line yet. So at the moment, when we spoke the last time, we had some of the House members, including Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who pledged to cap the 2024 government funding bill, the budget, at the 2022 budget levels. Now, that's what we have heard. Now it really is baked into the work of my Republican colleagues. The Freedom Caucus just a few days ago stood up and talked about the cuts moving at this number. They talked about the $130 billion in cuts that this would generate. And just if I give you a sec, if you give me a second here, if you were to take that the 2022 numbers, you would and apply it to every agency, you would just see an 8 to 9% cut everywhere. If you would, as some people have spoken about, hold defense resources harmless, then you would be talking about to non-defense about 18 to 19% in the cut. I think I mentioned this potentially earlier. And then you've got the case where if you hold harmless both defense and veterans, and there's talk about that because the cuts to veterans and veterans health would be, in the area of about almost $32 billion. But if the decision they make a decision not to do that, then we are looking at, 23 to 25% cut in domestic discretionary spending. And that one last point, if we would see that there are some who talk about increasing the defense bill, in which case then what you're looking at is close to maybe 30% cut in the non-defense discretionary spending. So what I did at the time, and again, I may have mentioned it, you lose track of time these days. I asked all of the cabinet secretaries and other senior leaders to provide me with information and specifically to get a sense of the implications of the real world impacts of reverting to of 2022, those funding levels. I wanted to know what the consequences were, and not in percentages, but in real human terms, what the cuts would mean to the American people. What does it mean for children, for families, for seniors, for veterans? And in appropriations, it's easy to focus on dollars and percentage changes, but only a few of our constituents are concerned about that. What they want to know and what we need to know is how the budget proposals affect their children's classrooms, the safety of the water they drink, the food they eat, or whether or not their community will be safe. Well, we have received the responses from administration officials now. And the information that we have received back is startling. Proposed Republican cuts are devastating to children, to families, to seniors, to veterans, millions of people all over this country. Hundreds of thousands of families will lose their homes. They will lose childcare that helps them to keep their jobs. College and job training will be out of reach for folks. Hundreds of local cops will be off the street. This is, in essence, defunding the police. This would take cops off of the street. Border protections will be gut. Now, it's important for me to let you know that the investments that we have made in these areas have been the results of both Democrats and Republicans. So we need to fight to protect the investments that we made and fight for the people of this country. So the cuts would leave behind our communities those who are most in need. I'm just going to run down some of the cuts for you. The cuts would take away the opportunity for 80,000 people to attend college. It would impact all 6.6 million students who rely on Pell Grants. It would cut the Pell Grant back by $1,000. 640,000 families would lose access to rental assistance. More than 430,000 low-income families would be evicted from Section 8 housing. This would cause an unprecedented loss of affordable housing for older adults, for people with disabilities, for families with children, and with veterans. 200,000 children will lose access to Head Start. 100,000 children will lose access to childcare. That's undermining early education and, as I pointed out, a parent's ability to go to work. 1.2 million women, infants, and children would lose vital nutrition assistance that they receive through WIC. Nutrition services, Meals on Wheels, would be cut for more than 1 million seniors. I mentioned the police. We would have 300 to 400 fewer local law enforcement positions. 56% reduction in Customs and Border Protection. Again, you're looking at. Did you just read about the most recent train derailment in Minnesota? Now this will take down the safety. It would be 11,000 fewer safety inspection days. This is for rail safety and 30,000 fewer miles of track that would be inspected annually. Air traffic controllers, 125 air traffic control towers would shut down. That would impact one third of all airports. I am not making up the numbers. I don't make up the numbers. And if we haven't already, we will get you all of this information, the 20 or 21 letters. They're not long, guys. This is not a tome, but that tell you very succinctly what will happen. There's one other with it falls in agriculture, which is food safety inspectors. You know that we inspect meat plants every day, poultry plants every day. Well, you lay off those inspectors. Those plants are not going to get inspected every day. That means they shut down. That means the cost of beef will rise. the cost of chicken will rise. It is frankly unacceptable, you know, and unconscionable. And I sense that, and what we've done, we posted all the letters. They're on our website. We have coordinated with the White House to release the information. And I know that you all have sent them around, and I thank you so very much for doing that, because I think that sharing the information with the stakeholders like yourselves is crucial. And I say that for a number of reasons. First, we need to be prepared to respond to House Republican bills that slash investments in programs that help improve the quality of life for millions of American families. These are the types of investments you all fight for every single day, and that impact the lives of the people that you are advocating for. The more we can do to highlight the consequences in the spending bills as we go through the House process, the more successful we'll be, not just preventing the cuts when we negotiate together in the House and in the Senate, but in fact, listen, you know what? My hope is that there may be some areas where we can not only stem the tide, it may be that we might be able to increase funding for key priorities that we care about. I'm also of the view here that, you know, I think I may have given you this example. I just forget. Weeks ago, months ago, the Head Start Association gave out the awards, the champions of Head Start. And there were Republicans and Democrats who got those awards. So I asked my staff to let me know who were the Republicans who got the awards, because essentially what I want to do is to say, when the information comes, that I'll pick up the phone to a champion of Head Start. This is what is being proposed. What do you think? And I've been trying in a way, because I don't think some people understand the consequences. I think it's a good soundbite. People can go and say, I'm cutting, you know, the government spending, and I'm going to cut it for the next budget. And we're going to go back to 2022 and look at those numbers. And that's what we're going to do. There's a sense that you feel good about cutting the budget. But I don't think there's a realization of what this translates into and how disastrous that can be. You know, several of you have been doing all this work for years. You may remember that from 2011 to 2014, when House Republicans could not take the labor HH bill to full committee markup. Why? Because both Republicans and Democrats thought that the cuts were too deep. Now, it's my hope that, and I've seen this in some of the hearings, I'll mention the hearings in a second, but that people say, I can't do that. My constituents are going to be hurt by this. I can't go down this road. That's not the truth for everything, but for some of the areas that they care deeply about, that will be the case. And so we need to battle this at every step in the process. So, you know, as I said, it's easy to talk about it. When you put pen to paper, they will not be able to identify the programs that they want to cut. Second, we need to ensure that there's no agreement. This is very serious. We have to, and it's a campaign, and I'm enlisting you in this campaign. We have to ensure that there is no agreement to cap domestic spending as part of a debt limit negotiation. That is the same as a cut. I don't know if you've seen the news this afternoon where Kevin McCarthy is saying that if the president doesn't sit down to negotiate, they're going to come up with their own plan on the debt limit and spending cuts and try to get it passed through the House. We need to hold on to this. You need to make your feelings known to the administration, et cetera, that we cannot align the debt ceiling to a negotiation on government funding. What happened the last time in 2011, we saw a sequester. We lived for 10 years with these caps, and we bought 17 months in avoiding a penalty on the debt ceiling. 10 years, 17 months. We all know what it was like to exist under those caps. We cannot allow that to happen again. So separate issues, they should remain that way. And again, I want to enlist your help on this effort. This is a very critical moment. So much of what we have worked hard for, so much of what the investments that we've made, especially over the last couple of years, we've begun to really to turn the way that federal resources are affecting families and small businesses and localities, et cetera, seniors, veterans, the whole nine yards here. So we need your help. We really need your help. Your advocacy on the urgency of investing in human needs, rejecting these calls for spending cuts and budget caps is so important right now, because I believe that together we have to make sure that the American people understand what's at risk. What are the services that will be gone? And we don't talk about Head Start in terms of slots. We talk about in terms of kids. We talk about people going hungry in this country. It's already we have a hunger crisis. We talk about rural America, where things are as tough as it can be. And then you're going to roll back on housing, on education, on jobs, et cetera, and a part of this nation, which is already suffering. We see hospitals closing down. So this is a critical moment, and we need your strength, the strength that you have, so that the impact has got to be real. I want to just encourage and urge members, House members and senators, both sides of the aisle, to just abandon the plans to impose these cuts. Work with us in the House to build off the bipartisan success that we have had in the last two omnibus bills. We made compromises, but we achieved some important successes. And we should not at this juncture roll this back. And we cannot allow them to be able to do that. We've got to deal with an appropriations process that is going to build on where we go from here. I will tell you one more thing. I have had a number of meetings with the ranking members of the subcommittees, with the entire House Committee on Appropriations, all of the Democrats. And we talked about what we were going to focus on. We've also said that we can't talk about every single issue, because then no one is listening, that we need to narrow our focus to a few issues. And we're pursuing that. But I must tell you that every single hearing, and there have been dozens of hearings in the last several days, we have worked with ranking members and all of the subcommittee, that your first question is about what the cuts mean. What are the effects of the cuts? And then follow on from there. And I must tell you that I'm so proud to be the ranking member of this committee. You have no idea of how that message is getting through. We have distributed all of this information to all of our committees. I'm now trying, and as I'm talking to you today, I've been in touch with the veteran service organizations, with the environmental organizations, and intend to try to do this so that we are galvanizing people nationwide to stand on their feet, to speak out, that write op-eds, that have press conferences, that get people to write, to call, etc., so that I'm hoping to appeal to some very fine members of this institution, moderate Republicans. People care about why they came here and what we're doing, and they cannot fathom the depths of these cuts and what the effect will be on the lives of the people that they represent. As you know, what we do to the Indian Health Services. And one House chairman says, I promise you, we are not going to make these cuts to the Indian Health Service. Another, I promise you, we're not going to make these cuts to veterans. We're not going to do these things. Well, that is what has to manifest itself. I am so grateful for your tireless work. You really are the ground troops. You really are the wind beneath our wings here. I'm so honored to be your partner in this fight. I look forward to our working together. And again, we met in January. We're meeting again now. We will continue to meet. I want to get a sense from all of you of what's going on in your organizations. I come out of it, you know, I came to the Congress out of political and community organizing. And what I did in campaigns was, and we contacted people, I would ask the individual, okay, who did you call? How many contacts did you make? And when my response was, we called a lot of people and don't worry. Well, that is not the answer. If you don't know where you are unless you're quantifying who the hell you've been in touch with, how many people we've been in touch with, and what is the response. That's the way you win elections. I view this as a campaign. And it's really a campaign to help families. They deserve better than where some of these folks want to take us. You know that. I know that. So let's not hold, I don't want the extremists, and they are the extremists in this Congress, to hold the people of this country hostage. I will hush up and happy to answer any questions.
Oh, we like you talking. Thank you so much.